back to Jeff Merrick Show. Still to come, top of the hour, Jeff Gorton, NHL Network analyst, of course, former general manager with the New York Rangers, previous interim GM with the Boston Bruins, who was responsible for the Bruins picking up Zdeno Chara, Tuukka Rask, and this resonating, Phil Kessel, Milan Lucic, these types of players. Talk to Jeff Gorton, top of the hour. Also, we'll be joined by Eric Engels of Sportsnet.ca, more on the Carey Price situation. If you're listening to us on radio, the news of the day, Carey Price away from the Montreal Canadiens indefinitely after voluntarily entering the NHL, NHLPA Player Assistance Program. So we'll talk to Eric Engels about that. Also, Pat Brisson from CAA Hockey will give us the latest on one of his clients, namely Jack Eichel, and what the immediate and long-term future is for that player and his relationship with the Buffalo Sabres. Meantime, questions around the Calgary Flames, and just talking to Elliot Friedman a couple of seconds ago, and the name that he mentioned was Oliver Shillington and what's going to happen there. And for that answer, we go to Haley Salavian of The Athletic, who covers the Calgary Flames on a full-time basis. Haley, how are you today?
Doing well. I was listening to the show, and I heard Elliot kind of stomp on my territory. That's
oh, I
fine.
Know, right?
We can share.
Nah, listen, every time a light goes off, Elliot appears. He just wants to be on every single stage. I swear, opened the fridge this morning and Elliot jumped out. I put two pieces of bread in the toaster. Elliot popped out. He seems to be everywhere, Haley. But let's start with Shillington then. Like, we'll get to some of the, what's happening with Goudreau and, both Matthew, and I want to throw in Brady Tkachuk as well because he used to cover the Ottawa Senators. But we'll start with Shillington and the decision there. Give us a snapshot of what the expectation was for Shillington going into Calgary camp and where is it right now?
Yeah, I'm not totally sure what the expectation would have been for Oliver Shillington. I think he's been a player who, for a while now, at least externally from the media and just, being able to watch him and seeing his opportunity or lack thereof at the NHL level, he's kind of been stuck in that tweener space of, he looks really good in the American Hockey League when he gets sent down to Stockton. We see those flashes of what made Oliver Shillington a really promising prospect. And if you go back to, the draft in 2015. I mean, he was one of the top-rated European skaters that year and, mm-hmm. among one of the top-rated defenders as well. So you see flashes of what made him such, an exciting prospect. But then, he was never really able to grab that full-time footing in the National Hockey League and at that level with the Flames. And there's a lot of debate, in this market over, is it Shillington who's, maybe just not stepping up, or is it the Flames not giving him enough of an opportunity? It's that chicken and the egg conversation when it comes to Oliver Shillington, it seems. So, I don't know if there was a ton of expectations just with the amount of bodies that the Flames brought in, just Nikita Zadorov, Michael Stone, Eric and Branson, on top of already having, three of your top four already locked in, and Noah Hanifin and Rasmus Anderson and Chris Tanev. So I think the expectation was just, hey, we've got enough D here, but if you can come into camp and show us that you belong to be here, then absolutely. Like, they're never going to say, no, you can't play if you win a spot out of camp. So I think we've kind of been seeing that from Oliver Shillington. We're seeing a guy who's on a two-way deal, another two-way deal, come into camp and really try to prove why he deserves to make the Calgary Flames. If that's him being on the opening night roster, just, having a spot as maybe the extra defender, and he kind of swaps in and out so he doesn't have to go and clear waivers and go back to Stockton. But we're seeing Shillington show a lot of those things that made him a promising player. And, there's never been a question of his skill set. Oliver Shillington's a great skater. He's a good puck mover. He has a lot of good offensive instincts. But it's been the lack of consistency, and just, shift to shift, showing what he can do, and game to game, showing what he can do. And we're seeing him have a really good preseason, really good camp. He looks really great. And I think if he just continues to be consistent and, kind of take even more of those little mistakes out of his game, it'll be hard to justify him not being on this roster if he keeps performing the way that he is.
The interesting thing about, and we'll get to more specifically to Mark Giordano here in a couple of seconds, but when you lose a player like Mark Giordano, You know, I sort of equate it to the St. Louis Blues losing Alex Pietrangelo. And it almost seemed as if, you know, ever since they lost Pietrangelo, and maybe even you can make the argument before when they picked up Justin Falk as some Pietrangelo insurance, it seems as if the mantra in St. Louis has been, let's get and put together as many defensemen as we can who have a similar skill set or collectively can do what one person could do previously. So it's, you know, Torey Krug will sort of replace a little bit of the offense, and, you know, other players that they bring in can sort of replicate other things that Alex Pietrangelo can do. When I look at losing Mark Giordano, I think that on the Calgary Flames, my first thought is, okay, we're not going to replace Mark Giordano, but we have to replace some pieces of him. Mm-hmm. Would Shillington represent some of the offensive loss that Mark Giordano brought to the Calgary Flames?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's important. Like, the Flames know, and I think most people know, you're not going to really replace Mark Giordano. It's, you know, they're going to have to try to do that by committee. And so I think, you know, your take on that is right. I mean, you have to try to find a blue line who can just kind of still have that same level. But it's going to have to be up and down the D pairs instead of just having Mark Giordano there. And that's been a really difficult thing for the Flames this preseason. Their blue line has been a major question mark. But I think Shillington can absolutely bring some of that offense to the table, whether it's at even strength or whether it's on the power play. It'll be interesting because we've got, you know, Noah Hanifin, who I think is somebody who could quarterback the power play. We've seen him do it. And, you know, he's just shown really good offensive instincts as well. Noah Hanifin's really good at finding seams, making good plays. We've kind of seen him adjust from just firing the puck on net and actually, like, making a good play. And so you've got a guy like Noah Hanifin who has that, you know, those offensive instincts. And you've got Rasmus Anderson, who was kind of tapped to be the next Mark Giordano. And you've got Yusuf Alamaki, and now you've got Oliver Shillington. So you've got players on your blue line who have offensive instincts. But I think, it'll be a good thing for the Flames if Shillington can step up and provide some of the offense that they've kind of lost in Mark Giordano. But, you know, it's going to be the defensive side of the puck where they're probably going to need some help.
Haley, I want to get to the most interesting family in the NHL, and that's the Tkachuks.
Yeah.
What do you... Okay. I know this always gets people in trouble when you ask questions like this, and you go, oh, America, I hate you. Here's a potential scenario. Matthew Tkachuk plays this season. Matthew Tkachuk takes his qualifying offer. Matthew Tkachuk leaves after that at 24. See? Mm-hmm. I mean, it could happen. Like, the way the contract was structured leads everyone to believe that may have been the strategy. Or, as we're seeing with the Brady Tkachuk situation in Ottawa, this is Newport and the Tkachuk family looking to take control in a situation, namely a player with RFA status, in a situation where normally the team has control. The one thing we know about the Tkachuks, they know the industry, they know hockey, and they want and desire control in all situations. I'm not saying that Matthew Tkachuk's situation is likely, but it's out there. How much of a conversation is it in Calgary?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty big one. I mean, for 6-8 months now, people have been talking about his $9 million qualifying offer. And a lot of that kind of came up because some fans and media started saying, you know, oh gosh, Matthew's not playing very well this year. This guy's going to get $9 million. Is he worth it? And that's kind of how it started to come up, was people questioning whether Matthew Tkachuk is worth $9 million based on, you know, one down season in a pandemic after, you know, leading the team in scoring the year before. But, you know, that qualifying offer thing, you know, I started asking some questions and digging around. And yeah, the scenario that you brought forward is one that is out there. I don't think it's something that's, you know, a dire situation. You know, I don't think that they're going into the season saying, you know, if this doesn't go well, he's gone. I don't think there's anything imminent like that, but I think it is something that people are aware of. And, you know, we could see it go a couple of ways. I think, you know, if this season goes well, you know, with Matthew, with the Flames, with Matthew and Daryl Sutter, then, you know, they can negotiate a longer-term deal, another short-term deal, whatever. If the season goes poorly, Matthew can take that qualifying offer and essentially force the Flames' hand, because they're not going to just let him walk to unrestricted free agency. But then you're in a situation where you're probably trying to trade Matthew Tkachuk, and you're probably trying to sell low, because all the other teams know, well, he's taken the one-year QO and he's walking free agency, so what are we going to give up for a guy who'll be available? So it's an interesting conversation, and I think regardless of which path this goes down, the common denominator is that Matthew Tkachuk and his group have the control in this situation. Mm-hmm. They have the leverage and they have complete control over which path they go down. And that's why the bridge deal is structured the way that it is. It's giving the player, it's giving his family. I mean, Matthew's the one that says the Tkachuks do business together. So I don't think it's crazy for me to say that it gives Matthew and his family, his agent, control over the situation. And so that's why I'm not surprised by anything that's happening with the Brady Tkachuk negotiations. It's when I still covered the Senators over a year ago, I don't even know when I wrote this story, but I wrote something. I was like September 2020 about Brady Tkachuk. And I said in the piece, like, we're probably going to be looking at Matthew Tkachuk's contract when we're talking about Brady. There's a direct kind of comparable, maybe not so much in terms of the numbers, but I kind of said back then, like, we're probably looking at a bridge deal for Brady Tkachuk, because we have a body of work from Newport and from Matthew's contract that shows that they want control over the situation. And that's probably even more so in a market like Ottawa, where we've kind of heard from insiders like Elliot, where, you know, Brady Tkachuk likes Ottawa. He likes his teammates, but what's the incentive to sign for 8 years when you don't know what's going to happen in year 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or when you know in a couple years down the road the cap is going to change and you'll probably be able to make more money? So there's like a financial and, I guess, a personal, professional angle to this where, you know, what is the incentive for Brady Tkachuk to sign an 8-year contract right now, other than the fact that they're offering him a ton of money and AAV on that deal? But, you know, other than signing for a big ticket, what's the incentive for Brady to sign that long right now? That's the big question.
It's one thing to be, you know, best friends with Josh Norris, and it's another to marry yourself to a contract for 8 years. Okay, well, we'll park the Tkachuk conversation. And the other tricky one, listen, Johnny Gaudreau doesn't want to talk about it. The Flames, you know, don't want to comment publicly on it either. But do you have a handle on what's happening with Johnny Gaudreau and the Calgary Flames?
You know, I thought I did in the off season, and I remember sending a note to Elliot about it, because I reported out there has been no significant contract talks. And then I think 12 hours later, Elliot was like, yeah, they're talking. And I texted him. I was like, oh, damn. Like, thanks for that. You know what? But no, what I had heard is that there were conversations between the That's all we talk about is the Tkachuks, I guess. But, you know, there were conversations between Goudreau's camp and the Calgary Flames this summer. How far those conversations got and how serious they got, I don't know exactly. But obviously we know that they didn't get far enough to get a contract signed before the preseason. And, you know, the season's, I guess, the Flames start playing in 9 days. So, and they're not talking about it. So where that's at right now, I'm not totally sure. I think it's tricky because they already kind of passed that deadline where there's the 5-team trade list for Johnny Gaudreau. And I think a lot of us in the media and even the fans kind of said, maybe that's the deadline to decide what you're going to do. And they passed that. So now we're in this spot where it's okay. You know, this is the year, I guess, finally, where that question is going to be answered, is what are the Flames going to do with Johnny Gaudreau? And I think it's not ideal because you're really handcuffing yourself to that trade list. Mm-hmm. But, you know, not signing Johnny right now does give the Flames some flexibility to figure out, okay, cause, you know, depending how this season goes, if things go well and Johnny plays well, you can sign him. You can make him a Flame for life. You can continue to build on, you know, the offense that Johnny brings. I still think Johnny Gaudreau is the most dynamic offensive player on the Flames. I think Chuck's great, but, you know, how do you replace Johnny Gaudreau's goal scoring and his offense? It's not easy. So that's always been my stance where it comes, you know, if you trade Johnny, who's going to score for you? Because that's been a big problem for the Calgary Flames for a number of years, is consistent offense. Sure. So you can go through this year and see, okay, if it goes well, then yeah, we'll keep Johnny. And if it goes poorly and you feel like you need to retool, okay, then you're not locked into a contract and you can flip him at the deadline as an unrestricted free agent, but you're tied to that five-team trade list. And are those five teams going to be teams who are buyers at the deadline? Are they going to be teams who need someone like Johnny Gaudreau? So it's tough. I think not having a contract gives the Flames more flexibility. But, you know, they still don't have a ton. So, unfortunately, I don't really know where they're at right now. I know that there were conversations. Like I said, I don't know how serious they got or how close they got to anything. But that's something that's really just going to remain to be seen. And yeah, no one's really talking about it right now. So I think we're just going to keep having the same conversation for a while. Great radio, I know.
As both parties hope the conversation goes away, quite the opposite happens. Really quick, we got about 2 minutes left here with you, Haley. What's been the most interesting story outside of the ones that we've discussed already? What's been the most interesting training camp story for the Calgary Flames for you this preseason?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for me, and I'll try to keep it brief, is just how puzzling this team is right now. I've been working on a story with my colleague Eric Tahachik, and he does such a great job. He's one of our big national writers. I think most people probably know who he is. But, you know, we've been kind of asking around and trying to, you know, we were initially looking like, what's the state of this team? Like, what are the Calgary Flames? And it's a lot of people don't know. It's very much on paper. They're running back the same group. So much needs to go right for this team. And I just think this is a team where it could either go really well and they could be, you know, a pleasant surprise, or it could be a disaster. You need Jacob Markstrom to bounce back. You need a better year from Matthew Tkachuk. You need a better year from Sean Monahan, Michael Backlund, Rasmus Anderson. You go down the list and there's so many bounce back candidates. And there's also so many ways that this could go completely wrong. Those guys don't bounce back. Trevor Lewis and Brad Richardson drop off a cliff. So nobody's willing to say that they're good or bad right now. And they're just right dead smack in the middle, and nobody really knows what's going to happen. But there's a lot of people that we've talked to that have faith in Daryl Sutter's ability to make this work. But that's the most interesting for me.
We got our words in, and we got to hustle right to the break. Perfect. Yeah. Haley, all the best. We'll check in regularly. Thanks so much for this.
Thanks, Jeff.
Still to come this hour, we'll talk to Eric Engels, who covers the Montreal Canadiens for Sportsnet.ca, and the Carey Price news is the hockey headline of the day. The Montreal netminder away from the team indefinitely after voluntarily entering the NHL/NHLPA Player Assistance Program. He was at the press conference virtually, obviously, with Marc Bergevin earlier, and of course has his thumb on the pulse of what's happening in Montreal. So we'll get Eric Engel's thoughts on that. Bottom of the hour, Pat Brisson from CAA will drop by on the latest in the ongoing Jack Eichel situation and the Buffalo Sabres. Meantime, just recently announced as NHL Network analyst, he is a former general manager of the New York Rangers, interim GM of the Boston Bruins, and laid great foundations in both of those places. He is Jeff Gorton, and he joins me on the program now. Jeff, thanks so much for doing this, and congratulations on the new assignment.
Thank you, Jeff. Congrats on your new show, and happy to be on.
Beats working for a living, hey, Jeff? Like, that's what I keep telling
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
Beats working for... Now, before we get into some other things around the NHL, the headline story is the Carey Price situation. We're all on the same page. We're glad that he's getting the help that he needs, and we all wish the best for Carey Price and his family. I'm curious, you know, watching that Marc Bergevin press conference this morning, and, you know, at times it was emotional, specifically when Bergevin was asked, you know, what Carey Price, the person, means to him. It's a challenging question, and it was a hard answer to get through. But, I mean, you've sat in that chair. You've been a general manager of an NHL team. You know the pressures that come along with it. You've done press conferences, some you wanted to do and some you probably didn't. If you're the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens and you're presented with this news and you need to put together a way to deliver it once the announcement comes back, essentially what I'm asking you is, as a GM, what do you do in this situation, Jeff?
I think the first responsibility is to the player. You know, you sit down with the player and then you talk about the situation and talk to him, make sure he's comfortable, his family's comfortable, and then obviously eventually it's going to be something that's going to leak out. So you start getting the message out there and try to be as transparent as possible. And today, most of them want the information out there rather than have to answer it several times. So,
Jeff,
you know,
hang on 1 second. We're just having a problem with your line. Our Lance Kennedy, our technical producer, is going to give you a call back here. We'll get a clean line because it's an interesting situation and scenario as a general manager. You know, there's no, as we wait to get Jeff back on, you know, there's no sort of guidebook. I mean, there's certainly sort of, you know, an oral history of general managers and what to behave, how to behave and what you do, and information is passed on. But there's no guidebook in a lot of ways for being a general manager in the NHL. It's interesting. You know, a lot of coaches will write books. A lot of referees will write books. Players will write books. So very, very, it's very seldom, if ever, we get a peek behind the curtain at what happens in the general manager's chair and the general manager position, which is why I'm really curious to talk to Jeff about what you do in this situation with Carey Price. Also curious to get Jeff's thoughts on, you know, the preseason. What does it mean? What are you looking for from players? Because here's someone who has, you know, when I look at, you know, if I was the owner of a team and what type of general manager would I want to hire? Like, who would I want to guide a ship? Listen, the two teams that Gorton's been involved with, you know, have one turned into a Cadillac Stanley Cup winner. And the other looks to have one of the brightest futures of any team in the entire NHL, the previous being the Boston Bruins and this one being the New York Rangers. So his perspective is an interesting one and a valuable one. And I'll be interested when we get him back here on the line on a better line, you know, how he would handle that situation with Carey Price. And again, if you're just joining us, Carey Price, the Montreal Canadiens, announcing he's entered the NHLPA Player Assistance Program. Now, that program helps with drugs, alcohol, and mental health issues as well. Bergevin spoke this morning about it. Interesting to get a little bit more of Jeff Gorton's perspective on how he would handle that if he were the manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Also, Eric Engels, who was part of that Bergevin press conference, will comment on the presser, the future of the Montreal Canadiens in net, and Carey Price. Here in a couple of moments. Bottom of the hour, Pat Brisson from CAA will get into the Jack Eichel situation. We do have Jeff Gorton back. He joins us. Sorry about that, Jeff. Your phone was playing enemy with us there. If you could sort of pick up on, you know, after you find out the information and your first thought is right away to the player, what happens after that from the GM's chair?
I think once you're comfortable and the player's comfortable and the family's comfortable, you know, you've got to talk to the media and get it out there and you know, tell the story and make sure everyone's comfortable. And you know, you talk to your players, your organization, the coaches, and have everybody know the story and inside be strong with your group and you know, go from there and do everything you can to support the player.
When you notice that you have a player who is struggling, do you feel that as a general manager, it's incumbent upon you to approach that player? Or do you have a hands-off policy? What do you do? Essentially, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about being a GM because, you know, there's no book you can pick up called How to Be a GM in the NHL. When you see that there's a player struggling, Jeff, what do you do?
I think you got to go see the player. You know, you kind of have to think of it like, you know, you're a parent and these are a little bit your children, right? You have to look after them first and make sure that everything in their lives is going the right way and you're responsible for them while they're on your watch. And, you know, we've had situations with that in some of the places I've been. And you sit down with the player and you just talk to him about his life and make sure that the choices are being made. Is there help that needs to be? Is there something we can do for you? Is there some kind of help we can offer? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times the players, they want that help. They need that help and they're very appreciative for you to do that. And as long as everything is with them, you talk to them first and handle it with them and then keep it in house and then go from there as long as they're comfortable with that.
Away from the Montreal and the Carey Price page, I want to ask you about star players and handling star players. We all know that you handle star players differently than other players. I remember Bob Gainey once had a quote, and I'm paraphrasing here and probably butchering what Bob Gainey said, but it was something along the lines of, as a general manager, you better hope that you have headaches Because if you have headaches, that probably means you have star players. And if you have star players, generally, you're going to have a really good team. If it's easy being a general manager, it probably means your team is no good. I'm paraphrasing that, but the spirit of that comes from Bob Gainey. Your thoughts on how to handle star players in the year 2021, which I'm sure was, you know, much different than when you started in the NHL.
Oh, it is. There's no question. I think the biggest thing you can do with those guys now is you give them a little bit of a voice, right? You're talking to them and make sure that they understand, you know, that where they are in the pecking order. And, you know, you have to treat them, you know, have to be accountable too, and coaches have to hold them accountable. I remember when Torts had Panarin and we acquired Panarin, he called me and he said, listen, I tell everybody, you can do, you guys don't try it. And we all understand that. And those guys, star players, they have a different way of thinking. They have a different mindset. Their mind works totally different than third, fourth players. Mm-hmm. And we all know that and understand that. But giving them a voice on the team, let them understand, you know, how you want to play, how you want to run your team. I just think that's the way that the league has gone.
With Jeff Gorton from the NHL Network, former general manager of the New York Rangers. And I want to ask you a couple of things about a couple of players on that Rangers squad, because I was mentioning off the top, like, you know, this foundation that you laid for the New York Rangers really is impressive. And one player, you know, we can talk about Panarin and Lafreniere and Kako in the future, Shesterkin. One player that I think may be, I mean, as much as you can be a quiet personality in New York, he may be it. I don't know that we really know or appreciate the person and the player that is Mika Zibanejad. What can you tell us about him?
Well, I think you nailed it. He is pretty quiet, but he's there's a burning fire in there. He wants to win. He wants to be amongst the best players. He knows he's good. But it took him time. I think it's a learning lesson for a lot. You know, we go through with a lot. We put these players in the league so young. We want them to be great, you know, so early. But it took him a little time. But once he took off, you know, obviously you think back to the 5-goal game with Washington, and some of the things he's been able to do to make himself a star player. He's quiet, but inside that locker room, he's really loved. You know, he's a good teammate. He's quiet, but he's a funny guy, right? He has those off-ice things with some music and some other things he likes to do, but he's a fun guy. Everybody loves him, but he's a gamer, right? When the lights are on, he loves New York, and he's really played well there.
You know, 2 years ago on my ballot, I had Artemi Panarin as the Hart Trophy winner. What should we know about him? And was that, like, I'll just be blunt, Jeff. Like, we all thought from day one, Artemi Panarin is going to the New York Rangers. Like, that's the beginning of the year. Yeah. Like, listen, at the end of all this, he's going to the Rangers, and he ended up there. Was that a difficult negotiation? Was it an easy negotiation? I mean, listen, you know what the conversation is like out there. Everybody was saying he's going to New York. What was the nature of that conversation like?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, listen, I think any GM that was the general manager of the Rangers was probably going to get him. I'm not naive enough to not think that. You know, my job there was just not screw it up. And you know, we gave him a lot of money. But at the end of the day, he had some other choices, so you had to step up and pay him. It hasn't disappointed, obviously. He's one of the best players in the world. But you're right, that was an easy negotiation, and he wanted to come to New York. We all felt that. That makes it a little easier. But, you know, like I said, my job there was just kind of stay out of the way and just get his name on the contract.
To a couple of the teams around the NHL, and we'll focus in on the East and the Metropolitan specifically. I mean, that's a division you have, you know, intimate knowledge of. Is there one team out there that, in your opinion, in the Metropolitan, doesn't get the attention that they should? And if so, who's that squad?
Well, I mean, for me, it's probably the Islanders. I think it's funny to say that they go to the finals, but like I looked at it yesterday. You look at you look at what people are saying, and it's always every year they kind of get discounted, and then there they are at the end of the year. So I don't know. There's not a lot of ads, right? Who does his business? Letty goes out, yet they find another guy. Chara's coming in. They just have a way of just plugging people into the way they do things. So I'm impressed with what they're doing and how good they've been for a while. If there's another team that maybe off the radar that probably, I've watched a lot of Jersey. I think mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see how Jack Hughes is going to do and his shirt and Hamilton, how he's going to fit in there. You know, I like Lindy a lot as a coach, so I'm kind of curious to see if they take a little bit of a step here.
You know, the one team in the Metro that I really have no idea what's going to happen to them, what kind of season they're going to have. Even though at the end of last season, we all said, look, we know they can score. They need to bounce back from the goaltender, but they have to fix their D. Chuck Fletcher went out and, you know, whether it was Ellis or Ristolainen coming in, Keith Yandle, he did address the issue on the back end, but I still, and we saw yesterday, Morgan Frost didn't make the team as well. I don't know that I have a handle on the Philadelphia Flyers yet. Do you? And if so, who are the Philadelphia Flyers?
Yeah, see, I'm with you on the Flyers. 2 years ago when AV went there, their first year, I was really impressed. And obviously they took a dip and Carhartt was off. Yeah. To me, it's if he's good, because they have a lot of talent. Their defense, to me, I like did. I think he's, you know, if you look at Chuck's career, he looks at situations and he doesn't wait around. And he went out and said, my defense wasn't good, I'm going to fix it. And so I like what he did. I think without Hazy, you know, starting the beginning of the year there, yeah, I think it's going to be hard, you know, to compete in that division. But there are a number of players in the Metro that are out. You know, Pittsburgh's got their problems. A few other teams have some guys missing. So it's going to be hard. That, you know, Metro, division of death a little bit here. You know, there's no easy nights.
It's tough. That's the one that everyone has circled. Like, wow, this one is a killer division. I want to finish up by asking you about the NHL's 32nd team. We may look at it and say, we like the blue line, we like the goaltender, but who's going to score the goals? What do you make of the Seattle Kraken this year?
Well, I like it. I think that, listen, it's hard. I think everybody wanted them to go out and get Tarasenko or Big Star and when they were available, but I like what he's done. I think he's, if I look at their roster, he's got four lines that are of real capable, hardworking players. I think he's got the ability with that defense to go out and make deals because everyone's looking for defense. And I like mm-hmm. their defense. I think their goaltending is pretty strong. I think they're in a division where they can make hay. So I think, you know, listen, I think that market's going to be really impressive. I think that's going to be a destination place. I think the players are going to love it. I think the fans are going to create a serious environment there. I like what he's done there, you know. Yanni Gord, some of those guys that go there. If you look back to Vegas, you know, who knew William Karlsson was going to be William Karlsson? So I would look for a few guys there on their roster that might do that for them. And I like what Ronnie's done there.
Listen, we like what you've done everywhere you've gone, and we think the NHL Network will be much in the same spirit as the foundation you laid in New York and the powerhouse you helped put together with the Boston Bruins. Best of luck with the new gig, and we'll check back regularly. Enjoy the NHL Network, Jeff.
Sounds good, Jeff. Good luck with your show.
There he is, Jeff Gorton. Man, is he a smart dude. I think along with everybody, just completely shocked at what happened last year with the New York Rangers, because this is very much a team that is on the rise. Okay, we'll get back to the headline story of the day, and we thank Jeff Gorton for stopping by. We'll turn our attention now to Montreal and the news about Carey Price voluntarily entering the NHLPA Player Assistance Program. We played a clip of the Marc Bergevin press conference off the top. It was in response to a question asked by our next guest, Eric Engels of Sportsnet.ca. Eric, good afternoon. Thanks so much for this. And, you know, I thought it was a really good question that you asked Marc Bergevin when he said, you know, outside of the player, you know, what does the person mean to you? And I'll tell you, Eric, that pause felt like forever. Like, this is a meaningful relationship these two people have.
No question, Jeff, and I'm not going to lie, it was difficult being in the room asking that question, and that question came from, you know, my own personal experiences with Carey Price. He was a rookie the same year I was covering this team. I've watched him grown up. I've gotten to know him as well as you can get to know a player, because obviously we're not best friends or anything like that, but you spend 15 years, this will be my 15th year covering the Canadiens, around certain people, you care about them, and I know how deeply Marc Bergevin cares about Carey Price, and I wanted to give him the opportunity to put that into words, which he wasn't able to do, understandably. And, you know, I think we're all extremely concerned for Carey and what really stands out to me, Jeff, is we always applaud people for their courage in coming forward, especially public figures, people that are so much in the spotlight. But I think about Carey in particular, and here's a guy who's one of the most guarded individuals in the NHL. And you know, I think a lot of people over the years have been upset that he hasn't been more forthcoming with the media. You know, he's put a bubble up around himself that I think really is about self-preservation. He did it out of necessity, and I've always understood that about Carey. And whatever he's dealing with, I'm sincerely hoping that he gets the help that he's seeking and that he's okay. He's a really good person, a person who's been extremely charitable with his time, with his money, with the causes that are near and dear to him. And he cares so much about the Montreal Canadiens and about playing hockey and doing his job to the best of his ability. And to know that he's going through something like this and what kind of advocate he could be for mental health just in the gesture of getting this help and speaking out, you know, good on him. And I just I hope he's okay.
You know, and I think one of the more salient points coming out of all of this, Eric, is that, you know, this is a headline player. Like, this is a first-star player. This is Carey Price. This is someone who, whether you're a casual or hardcore hockey fan, you know who this is. And I can't help but think that if you're another player who's down the lineup and maybe you're struggling and you're concerned about your spot and, oh, I don't want to give the team any misgivings about me, I think this opens a door for you. I think by having someone like Carey Price come out and do this, that gives another struggling player out there maybe more confidence to say, yeah, you know what? I need some help too here.
Yeah, and not to repeat myself, because you're 100% right, of course, you know, the highest profile style player, a guy who many by consensus would agree is, if he's not the best goaltender in the world, he was for a long period of time and still is one. And we just saw what he did in the playoffs. I think he was the best player in the playoffs. You know, it's, yeah, you know, Jonathan Drouin came forward and spoke. And if Carey Price, as I, not to repeat myself, as someone who just is so guarded, is willing to subject himself to what will be a public discussion for a very long time beyond when he gets out of this program and hopefully is in a much better place. If that opens the door for other athletes and other people in general who love the sport and are dealing with their own issues at home, you know, those are the positives you look for in these situations. And, you know, we've evolved a lot, but seems as though we're really in the beginning phases of getting to a better place as a society and dealing with these types of issues. And I think what Carey Price did today obviously was for his own mental benefit and his own health, without speculating obviously on what he's dealing with, because we really don't know the details, but it will be to the benefit of many other people. I think you're right about that.
So what next then for the Montreal Canadiens? Perhaps before we get to the team itself, what next for Marc Bergevin? You know, I talked to Elliot about this in hour one. You know, he goes into this season with only this year remaining on his contract. What's next for Marc Bergevin here?
You know, he's committed to doing his job and what he's contracted to do over the next year, and he repeated that. It's an interesting situation with him, especially on this day, discussing that. You know, Paul Wilson, who's the Canadiens PR director, came out before the press conference to address that situation because he didn't want it to become a topic of conversation within the press conference itself, which obviously is dedicated to the situation with Carey Price. You know, you go back to early 2021, and a lot of the buzz that was coming back to me, to Elliot, to several other people who were asking around, was that the job had really worn on Marc Bergevin and that we weren't sure that he wanted to continue doing it beyond this year that he's under contract for. And I think the mental strain of the pandemic and everything that he dealt with, the ups and downs of Montreal, really wore on him. And that got around to a lot of different people, and obviously some people that he may have confided in or that people were asking and wondering. And you could see it in terms of his own disposition and the way he was dealing with things, and you could just see that it was a really hard couple of years for him, especially last year. And he's got kids away at college in the United States and being away from them and isolated and dealing with the types of stuff that many of us have been dealing with throughout the pandemic. But what became clear around the summertime was that he was reinvigorated by the playoff run, and he's so passionate about the job and loves it so much Now, I don't know what Canadians fans can take away from the fact that he's going into this final year under contract without an extension in place. I think he would like to have it another way, but he's been firm about wanting to do it for his number and his value and what he believes it's worth, because this job, as today truly demonstrates, is as pressurized as any of the ones in the other 31 markets, but it's just a completely different beast. And you go over all the big breaking news, enormous items that have come out of Montreal in the last year, I can tell you guys, like, this job for me has not been easy. It has been really hard to synthesize and get the opinions out there and analysis out on such big news items. And I can only imagine what it's like for the general manager of the team to have to navigate it on a daily basis. So the fact that he has the passion and is reinvigorated to do it is encouraging. We know how much he cares about his players. He's made it extremely clear, not just today. You know, I remember when Brendan Gallagher signed that extension and I asked him, you know, how did you, did you guys rush to do this knowing that the perception might have been out there that you were headed towards a potential divorce? And he got extremely emotional that he would never want that to be the sense. That he talked about how much Brendan Gallagher means to him. And maybe something like what happened today maybe reinforced the point to Jeff Molson in those negotiations that, you know, he's put together a plan here and his body of work has to be judged on its own merit. But there's something to how much he cares about what he's doing and how much he cares about the people in the organization and the players and that family environment that he's created, where, you know, a couple of really high-profile players were willing to even come forward in these situations. Maybe that plays into things moving forward, but it sounds as though no negotiations are going to take place between now and the end of the season. So we'll see where it all goes. This could obviously be the last year that he's the GM of the team.
What's the expectation with Eric Engels? What's the expectation, Eric, for this team in that market? I mean, listen, coming off a Stanley Cup final appearance, you think that maybe it would skew the marketplace to believing we're just a piece away, etc. But it's been a challenging offseason, whether it's, you know, this news about Carey Price, whether it was the Shea Weber news previous, whether it was Philippe Deneau going to Los Angeles. What's the expectation now in the market for the Habs?
You know what, Jeff? I always joke with Tim McAuliffe about this, and it's always so hard. I'm always asked, in being in this market, to gauge the market and give what the pulse is of the fan base on this or that, and it's so bipolar that it's impossible to kind of capture how everyone feels and come up with a general statement about it. I think a lot of the people around Montreal, they're very educated fans, and they understand that, you know, did the Canadians overachieve in the playoffs last year? Maybe to a degree. I thought they played perfect hockey, and it was emblematic of what it means to come together as a team and how much hockey is a team sport, because they don't have the Connor McDavids and Austin Matthews of the world. They had to do it as a team. And so I think there's something in there that would have people inspired that they could be better than what their paper roster suggests. I think to a degree, some people may feel as though they underachieved in the regular season last year, even if they overachieved in the playoffs. I think everyone's aware of the fact that they're an extremely competitive and tight division, and that it's going to be really hard to make the playoffs this year. But the expectations, I think, if I have to generalize it, are probably that they will do it and that they should do it, and that is the path that they should be on, despite what they're dealing with now. And let's face it, what they're dealing with is as much adversity as they faced last year, which is they faced as much as any other team did, if not more. They're starting the year without Shea Weber and won't see him back. Joel Edmondson, who is their steadiest defenseman, is not going to be prepared to start the year. And Carey Price is out for an indeterminate period of time dealing with this issue. And who knows when he'll be back and what he'll be like when he's back and how he'll deal with all that. I mean, that is a lot of adversity to be facing. And if this team can rally around that to kind of overcome it the way they did last year in the playoffs, then it's going to be a remarkable season for the Canadians, because I think the chips are really stacked against them right now.
Last question, I'll let you go on this one really quickly inside of 60 seconds. Do we know what happens with the Nick Suzuki contract extension? Is this an in-season thing? Does the player want to bet on himself, as we've seen other younger players do, and do this at the end? What does Montreal want to do? Do you have a handle on the Nick Suzuki situation?
You know, it's a tough one to gauge, and it's a great question. It's a really relevant one, because he's going to be one of the biggest stories of the year as he steps forward as the established number one center of the Montreal Canadiens and the work he did in the playoffs to put himself in that position. Is he in the best possible situation to negotiate a long-term extension if the Canadiens come to him without them kind of taking advantage of him? I'm not sure. You know, if he continues on the same progression line that he's been on, he could be looking at something similar to what Elias Pettersson just signed for in Vancouver on a shorter-term deal. You know, on a longer-term deal, if he comes to that deal right now, he's probably saying to himself, well, you know, they want to lock me in at this number, but I think it could be worth a lot more, especially as you know, the financials in the NHL grow coming out of 2-3 years from now, and we're past the pandemic, hopefully, knock on wood. So if I'm Nick Suzuki, I'm waiting, but yeah, maybe Nick Suzuki wants to sign now and wants that long-term security if they're offering it to him. So it's going to be something that we're watching closely.
Absolutely. Great stuff as always, Eric. Great job with the presser, and thanks so much for stopping by the program today. Much appreciated. We'll check back regularly.
Thank you, Jeff, and congrats on the new show. I'm going to be listening regularly.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. Glad to have you aboard. You'll be on it regularly as well. There he is, Eric Engels, covering the Montreal Canadiens for Sportsnet.ca. I am pleased to be joined now by Pat Brisson of CAA, agent for, amongst other players, Jack Eichel of the Buffalo Sabres. Pat, how are you? Thanks so much for doing this today.
Great, great. I'm doing great, Jeff. Congrats on the new show.
Thanks. As I always say, beats working for a living. I'll tell you, your client, Jack Eichel, I mean, everybody now, I think by this point, understands the difference between spinal fusion and disc replacement, understands the dynamic between the Buffalo Sabres and Jack Eichel. But I think one of the interesting things that you can shed light on, Pat, is your position in all of this. And I'm curious, what under the CBA are you allowed to do on behalf of your client to try to move along something like a trade?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's an interesting case. It's a very complicated case, Jeff. I mean, I got involved about 5 weeks ago, and at first, I and we at CA, we had to absorb the file. We had to look into his rights and what he could do and what's right for him. First of all, from a health standpoint, was the priority. I mean, for him to feel well and feel good as a human being, first of all. And so when it comes to CBA, I mean, 99% of the cases, surgeries, whether it's ACL or labor, the thorn labor or a shoulder surgery, whatever, those are, let me complicate a case, but at the same time, like, everyone's pretty much on the same page. You have one doctor, a second opinion or a third opinion, and usually most of the case it's resolved pretty simply. In this case, you know, we're talking, as you and Elliot expressed on your podcast a few times, the ADR versus the fusion. And by virtue of that, I mean, the CBA is written in a way that teams have, the team doctors have the last word in regards to the procedure that the player can have. And this is a really, really complex one because it's a unique situation. Now, we've had, a lot of dialogues with the team. I mean, we were on a regular basis, you know, having conversations with Kevin Adams and Mr. Pegula there. And we've been very transparent, trying to work together here. I mean, like I said before, it's a complex file. We're trying to move as fast as possible. I mean, first and foremost, it's Jack's health. I mean, that's what's important. And every day that goes by, it's a day that we lost, in a sense, that we want him on the table. We want him to get his surgery of preference, which in this case is the ADR. And hopefully here in the near future, like I said, every day that goes by, I feel like I lost a day. So in other words, I'd like for him to get the surgery tomorrow morning. So, yeah.
Is it at the point now, because I think one of the things that's sort of been forgotten in all of this was, we, you know, everyone discusses, you know, what type of trade can Kevin Adams make here. I think one of the things that's forgotten here is this is a player that needs surgery. And I wonder if, are we at the point right now where this is a pressure point where something has to be done with the neck right now? We can't let this go any further. Are we at that point right now, Pat?
Well, there are opinions of well-renowned doctors are feeling that, yeah, the more pressure you get on the spinal cord, I mean, the sp- spinal cord doesn't forget. It doesn't forgive, so to speak. So it doesn't heal the same way as many other organs in the body. And the more stress, the more time it goes by, it's not good. So, yeah, the clock is ticking, and that's why we're putting a lot of emphasis and all the pressure on getting it done. Now, with regards to Kevin and the conversations he's having with teams, and I'm having with teams because we're communicating very well together. We have hopefully the same goals as to get this file moved as quick as possible. So there are teams that are willing to go forward with the disc replacement procedure. And we've identified a few teams, and Kevin's having conversations with them. And I'm speaking with them as well. And we're trying to move the needle as quick as possible.
One of the interesting points, or one of the salient points here, is access to medical information. Are we at the point where Buffalo has made medical information available to those teams? Is this a situation where perhaps Jack has gone out and gotten his own MRIs that would be made available? What's happening with medical information, and how much other teams are allowed to know at this point about Jack Eichel's health?
Yeah, he's had many MRIs, unfortunately, since March. And there are confidential files that are held by the doctors and that the Buffalo has, that we have access to, obviously, patient-client privilege, so to speak. And we've had separate opinions and with other doctors as well on our own. But we've, like I said, from the beginning, we've been very transparent, trying to work together. Now, with regards to teams that are in the mix, or teams that are interested in exploring a possible trade here for Jack, again, we've been transparent with them, and we want them to make their own decisions regarding the procedure. So we've been able to connect with them, because if you know, a team doctor is a practitioner that is you know, allowed to have a patient outside or inside of the NHL as well. So and is allowed to make his own decision and his own diagnostics, so to speak, on the situation. So we've been able to go outside, you know, outside the box, I would say, because again, it's a complex decision, and we've had more opinions, and then we're realizing that the ADR is probably a very good way to go, and lots of teams, or more than, you know, one or two teams, I would say more than a handful of teams, are willing to let Jack go in that direction. So, again, long story short, mm-hmm. we're trying to get the perfect fit here. And it's not an easy trade, because Jack's making $10 million a year. There's a five years left on his contract. And he's an important player, obviously. So there's a lot of pieces. But at the current time that we speak, Jeff, here, he's not Jack Eichel, the Jack Eichel. I mean, he's a depleted asset. And so there's a lot of buckets. There's a lot of moving parts that we're trying to, you know, assemble all together here. The sooner the better.
Should we assume that Jack would be amenable to going to any team in the NHL?
Yeah, he doesn't have a no-trade clause. I mean, a no-trade clause kicks in next year for him. And again, I mean, Jack wants to play. He wants to get this back fixed. He's tried everything, every which way, first and foremost, and then wants to play. So anywhere he goes, he'll be happy to play. Can't wait to play again. That's his goal, you know.
I would imagine that NHL is one thing, and also, listen, we've talked about, you know, USA Hockey and the Olympics on the horizon. That has to be in the back of Jack Eichel's mind as well, true or false?
Absolutely. He wants to play in the Olympics, and if he gets a disc replacement, we're talking about maybe, you know, 3 to 4, 4.5 months perhaps. Again, I'm not a doctor. I've learned a lot about the spine lately and what it does. And what I've heard all kinds of things, and I've got all kinds of emails. But I'd say, Jeff, I mean, if he gets this replacement, we can call it 4 months, and then he could be ready for the Olympics.
So one last question about Jack, and then I want to ask you one more about Brendan playing with Michigan right now, Vegas first-round pick. In your conversations with teams, is part of your responsibility in your mind to educate NHL teams on ADR, the artificial disc replacement that Jack favors? And would you go as far as to, you know, allowing them to talk to or introducing them to Dr. Prusmak, who Elliot and I had on the podcast in the summer, who's the surgeon who's proposed the ADR for Jack?
Yeah, Dr. Prusmak is one of the opinions. There are many, many opinions, and I don't play the doctor's card. I'm not a doctor. I've learned a lot about the file the last month or so, but we're let's put it this way, Jeff, we're trying to explain as well as we can within our role what's going on with Jack. So I'm having conversations with team general managers and team doctors to a certain point. I know my role, I know my lane, you know, and then but Kevin is also very involved with them. So again, we're communicating very well. We're working together here trying to solve this mm-hmm. puzzle.
Okay. I appreciate all the thoughts on this. I know we're up against the clock. I do want to ask you about your son, Brendan. If you can put your agent's hat down for a second and put on your hockey dad hat. First round pick, Vegas Golden Knights, University of Michigan Wolverines. Every time I see highlights of Michigan, I hear sweet Georgia Brown playing in the background as they fire the puck around the offensive zone. Give us a snapshot in a hockey dad's mind here of how Brendan is doing at Michigan.
Yeah. Well, we're very proud of him, and like every other dad, I mean, I broke a few remote controls over the years, so I always tell parents, bear in mind, I understand what you go through. I mean, you know, I'm emotional like any other dad, and we always want what's best for our kids. So try to wear different hats. But no, we're proud of him, his development. He's worked very hard this summer and knows the parts of his game that he needs to work on, and he's continuing to get stronger and like the old cliches, but also mature. And he's a good student of the game. You know, he's got a good hockey IQ, works hard, and he's sure in a great environment. Michigan's got a great team this year, a lot of skills and a lot of kids that are pushing the envelope. So, yeah, we're going to game tomorrow night. It'll be interesting. I haven't seen him in 5 weeks. Watch him on hockey TV last week and pretty much. But, yeah, that's he's in a good place, and one year at a time. That's what I tell parents, too. I mean, we try not to get ahead of ourselves.
Listen, one final thing on your son. Someone told me before the draft, I was saying, what can you tell me about the Brisson kid? Give me a good story. He said, I think Sidney Crosby used to babysit him. Is that true, Pat?
It is. It's a true story, actually. He was, a quick story, Jeff. He was probably, in 2003 or so. He was probably 2-3 years old, and Sid was at the house, and both boys were playing around, and my younger one, Jordy, was playing at Shattuck. I mean, actually, he was running across the room, and he cut himself open, started bleeding a little bit, and I ran, grabbed Jordy, my wife and I, we took Brendan and put him in Sydney's hands, and Sydney was at the house. You're babysitting tonight. We're going to the airport. He said, what do I do? Whatever you want to do, give him a bath, whatever, put him to bed. So Sid was alone with Brendan for 4 or 5 hours. We came back around 10:30. He put him to bed. He put his Superman little, PJ on, and Sid did a good job.
That's awesome. He's great at everything. This has been great. You've been very generous with your time. I know it's a busy time. I know it's a stressful time for your client, Jack Eichel. We thank you for taking pause here on the show with us today. Thanks so much for doing this, Pat. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Chip. Same here. Welcome anytime. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. There is Pat Brisson from CAA, and the Jack Eichel situation continues. And as we bring in my producer, Matt Marchese, you know, a couple of interesting things there as we wrap up the program before we talk a little bit more about Carey Price, which is the headline story of the day. Teams have been identified that will be fine with the ADR, which is the artificial disc replacement. And, you know, much like we talked to Dr. Ali Rendley on Tuesday, you know, the initial idea that, oh, we can get the artificial disc replacement, he can be back, you know, activity and playing in 6 weeks. And even here's his agent, Pat Brisson, saying, yeah, this is going to be a few months here, even if he gets the ADR. So don't expect, you know, Jack Eichel to have this, you know, surgery and then back in a month and a half. This is for any team that trades for him. And again, Of course, he doesn't have the no trade. He is amenable to going anywhere, obviously. Any team that gets him, you're not going to get him for a few months.
Yeah, and that kind of it kind of limits what teams have to be amenable to the surgery that he wants to have, as well as the fact that they're not going to have him for, you know, maybe up until March. So there's a lot that goes into that. I did like the fact that he is willing to go anywhere to play. I think that's really important. But you know what, Jeff, the thing that I kind of grabbed from all this is it does feel like it's kind of a shame, because if he could have had this surgery months ago, there was a chance that he could play in the Olympics. And Pat even talked about how important it is to get this surgery done sooner rather than later, because it's not something that just kind of heals over time and maybe you'll feel better after, you know, a few months. Like, this thing is putting pressure on his spine and it could cause other problems, is what it sounded like.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back, and again, this was an injury that happened. Buffalo Sabres, New York Islanders, Cases, Cizikas, push into the boards, nothing too violent, nothing that you would look at and say it's a bad hockey play. It's just a hockey play. And sometimes it's those innocent situations that you look at and you say, oof, man, it's bad, because the play didn't look awful. And this play didn't look awful, but you could tell right away Jack was in some pain. And ever since then, that led to the beginning of the end with Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres. It just very much feels, if you know, you listen to the conversations that are going on around Jack Eichel and the camp and the player, and where is this all going to go? And even if you try to, you know, parse through and read through the words of Commissioner Bettman on the program here on Monday, where he talks about Eichel's health being the number one thing, it does very much feel like we're at a place where, listen, we can't put this off any longer. Like, something has to be done here. Like, this can't go on for the good of the player's health. Like, he needs to have something done to this neck. He favors the artificial disc replacement. The Buffalo Sabres, as we all know by now, anyone who's followed the story even casually knows that they favor the spinal fusion surgery, something the Eichel camp is very much not into. So that's the player's point of view there through the agent Pat Brisson. It feels like we're getting close to something. You know, I thought it was interesting the way Pat talked about, you know, he's had a number of MRIs. We've had to do some different things here to, you know, let teams, you know, be comfortable with the medical information, and some things are guarded by the team. You know, it sounds very much like CAA is sort of going out the door and around the block to do whatever they can without violating the CBA, to make sure that everybody knows what's happening with this guy's neck and make sure that everybody knows the situation and the information around ADR, the artificial disc replacement. The headline story of the day is not so much about a hockey player, but about a hockey person in this situation, and that's Carey Price, Maddie. And we were all surprised by the news. Someone called me early this morning and said, you know, we're hearing something's coming out of Montreal today involving a player. Be prepared to change your program. And it's a huge story. Carey Price away from the Montreal Canadiens indefinitely. He voluntarily enters the NHL Players Association Player Assistance Program. We saw/heard the Mark Bergevin presser, which was challenging for the general manager at times. And outside of the hockey questions about what does this mean for the Montreal Canadiens, everybody's on the same page here. Like, there's no one who's not in support of Carey Price getting the help that he needs, and Carey Price, you know, helping to heal whatever is troubling him and his family. So we wish nothing but the best for Carey Price, his daughters, and his wife, Angela. Do you have a thought on the Carey Price situation, Maddie?
I think what's most important about this is obviously that Carey Price is getting some help, but I think kind of the larger picture here is that, you know, we've had Robin Lehner speak out about certain things, and Robin Lehner has been no stranger to speaking his mind, but this is almost a way for Carey Price to say something without saying something. And that's, listen, I know that I need to go get help for whatever it is. And we're not going to speculate on what the situation is, but he's saying, I need help. And I hope that a player of Carey Price's magnitude going out and seeking the help will give other players that same type of courage and strength to go do that. Because we know that there are a lot of players that deal with stuff that try to do it on their own. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I think it's important that a player like Carey Price can go out and say, hey, I need help. And I hope that that gives a voice to other players who are maybe considering it and saying, you know what, I don't think I can, or I'm worried about taking too much time away from the game. I think that's what's most important here. Just giving these players the, you know, kind of the courage to go do whatever they need to do to get help. And it seems like, you know, based on conversations that Marc Bergevin had and what he said today, is that the NHL and the NHLPA are making, you know, more of a point of sending people out to talk to players. And at the end of the day, like he said in the presser, it's got to be up to the players to go do it. And I hope that more will if they need to.
We hope for the best for Carey Price and his family. I got to tell you, I really enjoyed talking to Jeff Gorton. And the whole time, and he just got a new gig with the NHL Network working as an analyst there. And I'll tell you what, Maddie, the whole time that I was talking to him, I was saying to myself, we should probably get Jeff Gorton on as much as we can, because I don't know how much he's going to work in the media or for how long he's going to work in the media. Like, do you not get the sense that this guy's going to be a GM again in the NHL probably sooner than later?
Well, his track record certainly suggests that he should, based on what happened in Boston under his watch and what's happened in New York. And by the way, I was texting him after he got off the air, and he said he would be happy to join us in the future. So there we go, Jeff.
All right. So starting tomorrow, new co-host of the Jeff Merrick Show, Jeff Gorton of the NHL Network. That's excellent.
The two Jeffs.
Okay. Thanks to Jeff Gorton of the NHL Network for stopping by the program today. You just heard from Pat Brisson of CAA Hockey talking about the Jack Eichel situation. Thanks to Haley Salvian of The Athletic and Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night and 32 Thoughts. Kicked off the program as he does each and every day. On that, we'll bid you good afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Back tomorrow at noon for more of The Merrick Show.